Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Perry, better known as Atheist Human, and I want to tell you a little bit about why and what I'm trying to do here. No atheist should be afraid to say I am an atheist. I talk to atheists all over the world that have a difficult time coming out as an atheist. Some will be murdered if they do. Others will be shunned or disowned by their families. Even in the USA, it's illegal for some states for atheists to hold office, and that is a crime. We need to stick together, and we need to help others like ourselves to embrace their atheism. We ask atheists to tell their personal stories of how they came to atheism and how they deal with the blowback of trying to be open about their atheism. Our stories can help others make that leap of unfaith. And I want to introduce my guest. My guest is the host of Jackman Radio. He's better known as Senator Jackman. And Eric, you're on.
Hey, how you doing there, Perry? Thank you so much for having me, man. I'm honored to be on.
Not a problem. So tell me a little bit, or tell us a little bit of how you came to atheism. What epiphany came into your life?
Sure. Well, I was born outside of Boston in a town called Framingham, Massachusetts in 1986. And I was born to Irish, parents of Irish descent. And my dad is originally from Newfoundland, Canada. And that place, Newfoundland, has been called one of the most Irish places outside of Ireland. So obviously you have a very strong Catholic influence and presence over all of those immigrants' lives who came from Ireland and settled in Newfoundland. And then, eventually my dad landed in New England when he was 13 years old, living in Boston, which was also very Irish Catholic. And my mother is originally from, she was born in Somerville and she grew up in Cambridge, and she was Irish Catholic as well. So my family, mainly on my mother's side, were all Catholic, and my cousins all were raised Catholic, and they went to church and did confirmation and were baptized and all that stuff. But luckily, my father said that his children were not going to be designated a religion at birth, and they were not going to be baptized. And he wanted us to grow up in an environment where we would have the choice ourselves to decide if we wanted faith in our lives or if we didn't want faith in our lives. And, because that was kind of the environment that I was allowed to, in which I was allowed to grow up, I always would go to school at a very young age. I can remember being 4, 5, 6 years old and hearing these kids talk about God and talk about how they had to go sit in church and, they didn't want to do it. They didn't have a good time. They hated it. And always, as long as I can remember, I can always remember asking myself, why would your parents make you do something you didn't like or something that was clearly so uncomfortable or unnatural that didn't feel right? So really from a young age, I would say as far back as I can remember, I never believed something that I couldn't see, an invisible dictator in the sky. Just to me, that sounded so silly and so ridiculous, even as a 5-year-old.
I'm listening.
Yeah. So, because I was allowed to grow up in that environment, I was able to, listen to other people's views and hear what their religions were. Because I grew up in a town called Ashland the first 10 years of my life in Massachusetts. So you had obviously Christians, you had Catholics, and also a very large Jewish population of people. So
you had
a big mix there. We had a pretty good mixed bag. And, I never really knew the term atheist, or I never really knew that there was a designation or a group, that you could fall under that is basically the train of thought that there is no God and you don't prescribe to any man-made religion. So obviously I always had this in me, but really what really formed it for me and what really gave me the courage to really speak out about it, because no matter where you are or where you go in America, You know, people look at you when you tell them, well, actually, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. I don't prescribe to religion. They go, really? So you don't believe in anything? You don't think anything happens after you die? I mean, and I say to them, well, if you're so obsessed with that your whole life, and obviously no one has the answer to it, are you really living your life? You know? If you're living it under fear and, you know, because you're so afraid of what happens when you're, heart stops pumping blood to the rest of your body and your brain dies. I mean, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. What's the point of living like that? So kind of for me, when I first saw Christopher Hitchens do an interview, and he was being interviewed by Sean Hannity the day that Jerry Falwell died. And I'd never seen Christopher Hitchens before. And here is, you know, obviously I'm sure you're a big fan of Hitchens or familiar with his work.
Absolutely.
You know, here he is just laying in Jerry Falwell and Liberty University and Ralph Reed and the Christian Coalition and all those neocon asshole, holier-than-thou, right-wing, evangelical, religious people who elected George W. Bush. And I never liked Bush and never liked that program. And when I saw Christopher Hitchens just lay waste to those people so eloquently, and obviously he was totally shit-faced, smoked a cigarette, I was like, this guy is one of my fucking heroes, and this guy is pumping me up right now. No. So
yeah.
I always had it, and I always knew that I didn't believe. But once I was exposed to Christopher Hitchens, that led to Richard Dawkins and then Daniel Dennett and then Sam Harris. And that really, you know, becoming familiar with those guys really gave me the strength to speak out about it and not ever be afraid to talk about it publicly to anybody.
Mm-hmm. I love those guys. I mean, they helped change my life. Especially Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, absolutely, man. Christopher Hitchens is such a badass. I mean, you know, like a psycho like Jerry Falwell or Ralph Reed or Pat Robertson or any of those clowns would have any sway over another human's life and have control over how they think and their thought processes is so beyond me and so disgusting to me. And to be able to see someone like Christopher Hitchens stand up and say, no, you're a fraud, you're horrible, what you're saying are lies, you're preaching superstition about people's lives in which you know nothing about, I mean, that's powerful stuff, man. And it's incredible because our media doesn't do any service to anybody who doesn't believe. They cast you off as, you know, you have no soul, you have no righteousness, you have no ability to be a good person, which obviously we know is total bullshit.
Mm-hmm. And I loved his passion.
Oh, he's just, you know, he tells a joke. He goes, you know, Jerry Falwell and Enema. You know, so when you think about that, it's like his wit was just so and just so.
You're breaking up, buddy.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine now.
Okay, sorry about that. But yeah, he was just so sharp. And so to the point that he just every time I watched Hitchens, man, he fired me up. And I actually was lucky enough to meet Hitch before he died. I attended one of his readings down, ironically, at a synagogue in Washington, D.C. when I lived down there. And he was signing books and he gave a talk. And then I you know, walked up to him after and said hello to him and just told him, you know, how much I applaud his work and, you know, how much he means to me and that, you know, I really appreciate it.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, there you are. I'm sorry. You kept breaking up. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. Service pretty bad. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you now.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know if it's on my end or your end, but here's the deal for me. And I related to a lot of what you talked about because I was raised Jewish. And but my parents, well, they raised me Jewish. I had to go, you know, to Sunday school and Hebrew school and get bar mitzvahed and all that stuff, except for I was really partying hard in those days. And
oh, yeah.
I kind of halfway went through this crap just to please them. And, you know, I barely bumbled through everything. I did not excel at everything. And, you know, when it all was said and done, after I got older and everything, I found out that they didn't even really give a shit.
Right.
They were both atheists too. That were in a time. They never told me this directly, but everything they, their actions, and even when it came to when they passed away and everything, they didn't believe in a God. They were just doing that because of society, in particular in those days. And, you know, it sounds funny now, but in the 60s, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, 50s and 60s more so, things were really different. They're still the same to some degree, but I think there's more of us, you know?
Right.
There's more atheists now. And people are, that's why I have this show, is for people to feel more comfortable with coming out and owning their atheism, especially if they're not exactly sure if it's cool or not, or, you know, if they'll get beat up, you know?
Yeah.
So it's good. It's good to hear you coming from the background you came from. But it could have gone one way or the other, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
You're very fortunate that your father had such an open mind. Hello, I lost you. Hello? Well, it looks like I lost my guest. He's going to have to give me a call back. I just hope he can hear me. But let me tell you a little bit about me and where I came from. I was raised Jewish in the 50s and early 60s. Things were pretty tight in the communities, and the Jewish community hung tight together. The Catholic community hung tight. You know, Christian communities hung tight. And here he's back. You there, buddy?
Yeah, sorry about
that. Hello. It's all right. Just hang on. I was talking about me. and what we were talking about with the Christian community and the Catholics, which the Protestant, I should say, and the Catholics and the Jewish communities, everybody was all, you know, into their own. And
Right. You
didn't cross the boundaries, and you didn't marry outside of your faith and all that
Right. Kind
of crap, you know? So, you know, I was brainwashed from a young age to believe in God and that we were the chosen people. And I kind of felt good about that part, you know?
Yeah, well, everybody thinks they're chosen with their religion, you know? They think that their particular brand is the right one and the only one and the greatest one.
That's true.
I tend to agree with Christopher Hitchens that religion is, in fact, definitely child abuse. You know?
Yeah. It's
definitely child abuse. You're talking about a young child who doesn't know anything about anything, whose mind is a sponge and responds to things that are around them and given to them by an adult figure. So from a young age, you don't know the difference. You don't know that there's thousands of other religions around the world. And in your mind, you know, what you're getting is the only truth about the world. So that's a dangerous thing.
Yes, it is. Like you said, it amounts to child abuse. And when they're what you just described about the child looking to the adult for direction and really unquestionably taking it comes from our evolution as a species, and it's ingrained in all of us. And I think it's an abuse to take advantage of that particular thing and create these, I think, little monsters. In my mind, I know that sounds harsh, and it's not their fault, huh?
Right. I totally agree with you, Perry. I agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah, you're taking an innocent child who is being molded in the image of the person that reigns over them and has dominance over them. So if that person who has the dominance and, you know, the ability to guide the direction of that child's life is feeding them Seventh-day Adventism or feeding them evangelical Christianity or feeding them whatever religion it is, that child is going to believe is the final word on everything, and they're going to conduct themselves in that way, and they're also going to behave a certain way towards people who don't believe that.
And when it doesn't work in their life, they're very confused.
Yeah, well, the house of cards comes falling down, whether you lose a loved one early on or you get in a terrible accident or anything, any number of things that we experience as humans happens, and this unseen God doesn't step in and stop it from happening or doesn't save you or doesn't help you get the girl to go out with who you want to go out with, or you don't get the A on your report, or one of your parents dies in a car accident. That's kind of, I think, one of the beginning steps towards atheism.
Thankfully. Unfortunately, it takes something like that sometimes.
Yeah, for a lot of people it does. And then you mentioned when you were younger, you partied a lot. I mean, I know plenty of born-agains who were party animals, you know, love to do drugs, love to drink, you know, love to be a freewheeling human being. And then because they were going off the deep end and had no personal self-control or didn't have a strong parental figure to help guide them, someone put some book in their hand, filled their ear with a bunch of bullshit, and then they all of a sudden became born again and they got off all the drugs because of religion.
I went that route too. I became born again. And
really?
Went through that. Oh yeah, I lived with the elder of the church, and I studied the Old Testament, which I already studied for years. You know, when I went to Hebrew school and all that other nonsense. And then I studied the New Testament under this guy, his tutelage. And it was very, 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 how can I say this? It warps your mind. It just totally warps your mind. The circular logic and the lies to answer questions about why this doesn't jive with this and why did, you know, God, you know, have all these people killed and all that kind of crap. It never, you know, through all of it, that never quite sat right with me. It never did, even when I was a quote-unquote believer.
Right. So
it was
Yeah, you kind of like what I said earlier, you had that kind of, you always knew deep down and had that feeling that this is just basically a bunch of malarkey.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
The whole time.
I just
didn't know, like you didn't know, that there was an alternative called atheism.
Right. Well, I didn't know there was a community, you know, before the internet really blew up, you had to kind of suffer in silence, because I remember being in a friend's house and going over for dinner, and the parents would want to say a prayer before dinner. I'd be like, what the fuck is this? You know, I'd be like, I don't want to do this. I don't, you're an adult and you believe in this bullshit. No one's listening to you pray. You're talking, you look like a crazy person. You're talking to yourself, you know? So I never really would voice these things, to my,
starting to lose you again.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Yeah, service is spotty up here.
Sorry about that. Well, looks like I lost him again. I'm really sorry for my listeners. These kinds of things happen from time to time, and just got to push through them. You know, I could pray about it and see how far that gets me, but we all know that that's just a wish. Wishful thinking is all that is. I'm sure that he'll be back in a minute, but here he comes. Here he comes. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Better out here.
You're back.
All right, Perry, I'm sorry, man. I went outside. I think we should be good.
Hello?
Hey, I went outside, so I think we should be good from here on out.
All right, bud.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. we'll be doing this again and give you a little more notice on it, okay?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, I wish God listening to us.
Yeah, yeah. I said, maybe if I prayed about it, it would stop.
Harder and harder. But, yeah, ruin relationships, and, you know, you don't want relationships.
Losing you.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there now.
There comes a point where you can only listen to people so much in your ear about it and remain silent when you finally snap and say, look, dude, that's your program. That doesn't jive with me. I don't believe in it.
Lost you. There you go.
Okay. And, you know, people got religious programs for you. You know, they're going to tell you about their religion. You know, it just gets to a point where you can only listen to so much of it before you snap at somebody, you know?
Oh, yeah, I know. Trust me. I got 28 years in recovery, and that whole program is a God-based program, and it always drives me fruit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my higher power is other people, okay? Real simple.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, if I have an issue, I talk to somebody else. You know,
yeah, exactly.
I don't talk to the wind.
yeah, you don't, yeah, self.
So, you know, I want to snap all the time when I hear that. I'm looking for some, there's atheist meetings, but they're not around my town. St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have any big atheist groups here in New York.
You there? Lost you again.
And it's tough to, you know, people just look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, I know. They look at you like you got three eyes. So tell me a little bit about where you're at now.
Yeah. So are you talking about where I'm at with my atheism or just what?
Whatever trips your trigger. This is your show, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I have very close friends. I have a couple of friends who are who are as outspoken as I am and angry about religion and just the intolerance that religious people have in my sense and believe in it. And have sources and talk, be able to truly say to each other how we feel. So I have some very strong, you know, lifelong friends who are in the same boat as me.
Well, that's
cool. I've gotten cold periods. Just spoke about it. I'll watch it. People about the Catholic Church.
You're breaking up again.
Free deliverance from evil.
Eric, you there? Oh boy.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, good.
Sorry.
I'm losing you again. It's all right.
You ever see that documentary about the Catholic Church called Deliver Us from Evil?
No, I haven't.
So, you know, that's just all about the child abuses and then one priest, and they moved the guy to like half a dozen different dioceses, and they knew he was raping children. So, you know, I'll read something like that, or I'll finish that, and I'll get really fired up, and I'll get on Facebook and I'll rant about it and I'll fire up my rhetoric. I got to keep myself in check because how do I sound any different or any better than somebody who goes on tirades about their religion and how what they believe is better and stuff. Because, you know, almost sometimes people can look at atheism as its own religion. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Except for that all atheism is a non-belief in God. All the rest of the shit's personal stuff.
That's a good point, right? It means literally without God, without a God.
Right.
And
that's
so,
all it is. So
yeah,
there's no dogma.
No, zero dogma. I mean, it's very liberating and very freeing. You're not you're not constrained to anything. You're not in the prison of belief, which is a term that's used for that documentary about Scientology, the prison of belief. And it really is a prison when you have that, when you have a religion or that kind of train of thought wrapped around your brain, and it really limits you as a human being.
Yes, it does.
So, you know, I use comedy. I'm sorry?
Go on.
Yes. So I use comedy and humor and impressions, you know, to kind of soften the blow when I'm critiquing religion and the idea of a God. You know, George Carlin's one of my heroes. It's really hard to top George Carlin when it comes to, you know, talking about religion using comedy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They didn't come any better than him.
No, George Carlin and Bill Hicks. I don't know if you know Bill Hicks at all, but he's another one who just really hammered religion and really just hit it out of the park, you know?
I want to let everybody know that Eric here is one of the nation's premier Donald Trump impersonators. he's also got the show Jackman Radio, and it's at jackmanradio.podbean.com. So let's go into it. So how does your comedy help you?
Well, I've been doing impressions my whole life, and I started impersonating Donald Trump about 10 years ago when he had that whole feud with Rosie O'Donnell. Rosie O'Donnell was on The View, and she made fun of Trump because Trump had some controversy with one of his beauty pageants. One of his bimbos was caught drinking, and,
right.
You know, Trump held a big press conference and said, you know, I believe in second chances. She's a very smart girl. She does a great job, and she's going to represent this pageant so well. I made a lot of money on this pageant. I make a lot of money everything I do, Perry, and I'm very rich. And Rosie took to The View and said, oh, did you see Donald Trump? And then she flipped her hair to the side and impersonated him. And I thought it was so brilliant. And obviously the Donald didn't like it, so he called Entertainment Tonight, the TV show, to Trump Tower. He beckoned Entertainment Tonight's camera crew, and the camera crew showed up and put their cameras in front of Donald Trump behind his desk. He proceeded to go on like this epic 2.5-minute takedown of Rosie O'Donnell. He's like, well, Rosie O'Donnell's disgusting. I mean, you take a look at her. She's a slob. She talks like a truck driver. She's very unattractive both inside and out. And I think that Barbara Walters probably made a huge mistake hiring and really regrets bringing her on The View because she's very disgusting and she's a disaster. And, you know, it kind of just started from there. And then fast forward 10 years and the dude's actually running for president.
Yeah, no, you know, kidding.
To me, this Trump was just... Yeah, the dude was just always like a circus clown entertainer who had infinite entertainment value.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I could impersonate him so well, you could put Donald Trump in any situation. But the last situation I ever imagined the guy being in was being a real candidate for president. And, you know, holy shit, when that happened, for people who were into political satire and political comedy, I mean, this has been a goldmine, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Just every day, there's something new. So he outdoes himself tenfold the next day, and you just can't even believe what he's saying.
Well, that's why he's saying it. You know as well as I do, he's a carnival barker. You know?
Yeah, he doesn't believe anything he's saying. He's a brilliant manipulator, and basically there's a religion of Trump now. He's created his own religion. There's a religion of Trump, and millions of people are being suckered and buying into it. You know?
Yes, I know.
So what I've done, so what I did, you know, obviously I'm here in New Hampshire with the first in the nation primary. Fast forward to, so he announced in June of last year, our primaries in February. Finally, you know, I have a twin brother. My brother's like, Eric, you do the impression so well. You know, what about dressing up as Trump and going to some of his events? So finally, a week before the primary, I was finally just unhinged and crazy enough. I ordered a Trump wig off eBay. I got some bronze makeup, women's makeup. I had my friend put it on me, my friend Megan. And I showed up to one of his rallies where at a sports complex where there was like literally 5,000 people. And so, you know, I'm a bigger guy. You know, people say that I remind them of Chris Farley and Jack Black, which I take as a huge compliment, to be honest with you. And, you know, basically I just went and people wanted to get pictures with me. I mean, the reaction was just incredible. People wanted pictures. People wanted to hear who I was. They wanted, you know, they wanted to talk to me. They were interested, you know, who is this guy dressed as Trump and why is he dressed as Trump?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And really I was just there to promote my podcast, Jackman Radio, and kind of see how people would react. And just really at the end of the day, I'm all about making people laugh and bringing entertainment and fun into people's lives, because so much of our lives were spent working and in the hamster wheel, and we're miserable and we're stressed out and we're anxious about money and we're worrying about materials and keeping up with the Jones, you know, that we lose sight of the beautiful things on earth, and the beautiful things are laughing and loving each other. So that's kind of the place I come from with it, and I'm using
mm-hmm.
the platform that I've gotten to promote that kind of stuff. And what ended up happening is I went to probably the biggest rally he did in New Hampshire. He rented out what's called the Verizon Wireless Arena, where AHL American Hockey League team plays. You know, this is a huge arena with like probably 10 or 12,000 people can fit in there. So there was about 5,000 people there. And 300 members of the World Press, and I showed up 3 hours early, did a bunch of interviews, took pictures, people wanted to talk to me, I got on the Daily Show, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I worked the room, so to speak, and the room happened to be an arena full of 5,000 people. And finally Trump came out, he was on the stage, he was talking, and he spotted me in the back, and he said, "Oh no, get a load of this guy, tell me it isn't Trump." And, you know, he into the microphone, he goes, get him up here. So he called me to the front of the stage in front of everybody. And, you know, kind of the joke I have is he parted the Red Sea. So everyone kind of parted and allowed me through. And I couldn't get on stage because there was Secret Service and metal barricades, but I got up as close as possible, about 10 feet from Trump. And he was laughing his ass off, and he turns to his wife, "Melania, would you have married this guy? Oh, no." And he goes, "Congratulations. I hope you make a lot of money with this." So, you know, obviously the guy has a sense of, you know, he's got a sense of humor. But when that happened, man, that was it. After that thing ended, I did interviews with press in Finland, Russia, BBC. I was on CNN, MSNBC, Daily Caller. I mean, you name it, man. I had cameras in my face, people asking me questions, and, you know, kind of overnight the thing blew up, and that was back in early February, and I got some serious recognition for it, and then that led to more people to kind of dig into my catalog and wonder who I am. And I've been trying to keep it going and build momentum and, you know, keep people's interest. So obviously Donald Trump's not going anywhere, and, you know, since then I've developed an hour-long one-man show where I dress as Trump behind a podium, and I deliver remarks as Trump about the election, taking down the other candidates, you know, commenting on pop culture. You can go anywhere with the guy, and literally you can say anything as Donald Trump. Like, the real Eric Jackman would never say anywhere near these things to people in public, but when you're Donald Trump, you can say anything to anyone.
Yeah. You
so
sure can. Because
it's
you got
fun.
So much money, you don't give a shit.
Oh, I'm worth many billions, and quite literally I could shoot somebody in the middle of Broadway, and he would come back as a White Walker from Walking Dead and from Game of Thrones, and he would vote for me. He would. Even the dead people are going to vote for Trump. Everybody loves me, Perry. Everybody knows me. You know?
Yeah.
So it's been good, man. I've been enjoying it, and you know, we filmed, I rented an ice rink up here in Keene, a brand new ice rink for 2 hours. And we filmed a skit called Donald Trump on Ice, Trump on Ice. And it's Donald Trump is building a hockey team because he's going to go over to what he calls the Soviet Union and take on Putin. And
yeah.
that'll be coming out next April. Well, next month in April. So.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's been cool, man. I'm having a good time with it. I hope people will check it out on my YouTube page. If you just type in Jackman Radio, Donald Trump names his cabinet. I got a skit up there that I filmed back in January that we released in February, where I just go off on the other candidates and I name some people who Trump's going to have in his cabinet.
That's funnier than shit, man.
Yeah, thank you.
So you've been enjoying this, I take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's as I said, I've been doing comedy for many years, and stand up to empty rooms, to other comics who judge you and don't laugh at your stuff, and then to go from that to suddenly overnight getting, you know, you're seeing yourself on CNN and you're on The Daily Show, and you're, you know, people are checking your stuff out and really liking it, and you're getting messages and phone calls and emails from people you don't even know saying I love your stuff. It's an amazing feeling. It's very humbling and really a lot of fun. Really cool.
Yeah, I play music for supplement my income. I can't say for a living. I'm retired. Mm-hmm. But I love getting up on stage. What I like the most is when people respond to what you're doing. And the worst feeling is when you're doing the best you can do, and it's really good to you, and everything sounds great, and nobody's responding. You know.
I know.
That's just terrible.
Yeah, you're putting out all this effort. You've rehearsed, you've practiced, you're ready to go, you're delivering it, and no one's even paying attention.
Yeah, I know, man. It sucks. But
yeah, it does.
You know, yeah. for the most part, that doesn't happen very often, thankfully.
What kind of music do you play?
Good.
You play good music?
No, I play mostly blues and classic rock.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's my groove.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, you know, if you can get some people to come out and see you and make a few bucks and you're having fun, I mean, that's kind of how I feel about all this Trump stuff. I'm making a few bucks. I'm having fun. I'm able to get my art out there. And basically, I you know, everybody is really good. So.
Well, that's cool. So how does... How does playing Trump, and you obviously are a liberal, I could just tell by your demeanor.
well, I
lost you there.
Oh, sorry, you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say classic liberal, kind of with a strong libertarian bend.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry. So, yeah, you were saying.
Well, I was wondering how that flavors your the way you approach imitating him.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. No, I've done a lot of research in a lot of areas of politics and, you know, a lot of stuff, political commentator and author named Roger Stone calls elite deviance, where the most powerful people like the Bushes and the Clintons, essentially can get away with any crime without any repercussion.
Right.
So I kind of take the Trump character, and normally if you wanted to try to tell somebody in plain speak about all the crimes the Bushes have committed, they wouldn't want to listen to you. They would think you're crazy.
Right.
But if you take that information and you put it through the Donald Trump filter, and you know, you say, well, you know, the Nazis were very strong and very powerful, but did you know that George W. Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, was in business with the Nazis and made many millions with them. So if you say that like Trump, people are like, wait, holy shit, is he serious? So that might lead somebody to go home that night, go on Google, and type in Prescott Bush Nazi business, you know?
Right.
So I take some of that kind of what otherwise would be called like fringe or far out stuff, and I bring it down to a digestible level, and I put it through the Trump filter, and you know, it really makes people think, and I think, you know, in some way deep down, I hope that it's educating some people.
Well, I really like the way you put that too, the Trump filter.
Yeah.
I can see where that would make a difference. It's really funny. I was watching him when he was very first starting all this campaigning and crap, before he caught on fire, and so, and he started saying that his favorite book was The Art of the Deal. And right in the middle of it, he caught himself. He said, after the Bible.
Yeah,
it was just that obvious, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And then he, you know, and then on the next time he was ever in public, he had a Bible with him. And I thought to myself, can't people see what he just fucking did?
Well, excuse me, Perry. I take offense to that as a Christian. I've been a Christian my whole life. And nobody has a stronger relationship than God than Donald Trump. Now, quite frankly, Fred Trump is the greatest person ever to exist. He's only a step higher than God. But I love God. I love Jesus. And nobody does Jesus better than the people of Iowa. Vote for me. You know? But Perry, the fact that dude got second place in Iowa is mind-boggling, dude.
Yep.
Because he's a New York liberal atheist. I don't think Donald Trump's definitely an atheist. You know?
Yeah. Although he's for sure.
His God is money.
Yeah, I know.
All that guy believes in is money.
I really think his God is him.
Well, yeah.
And his money is the evidence.
Right.
You know, that's just how I look at him.
Well, the money and all the beautiful women I've been married to. I've been married 3 times, and I actually made money on the deals because I had a team of 1,000 lawyers who wrote up the greatest prenup ever.
Cool. You must have fun writing that material.
Oh, I sit down with my brother, and we spitball off each other because he does the impression, too. My brother's a very talented impressionist also. And, you know, depending on what audience I'm going to be in front of, I tailor my material to that audience. So, you know, for example, this Friday I'm playing at a VFW up here in New Hampshire. So, you know, I think if a safe bet is just to insult Hillary Clinton for 20 minutes. You know, just go off on Hillary, you know, talk about Barack Obama is a Muslim socialist who was born on Mars. I have his Martian birth certificate, and it's very shocking. You know, just kind of tell jokes along. You know, you gotta play to your audience. You gotta know your audience. So, you know, that's what I'm gonna do for that event. But if you're playing an event full of liberals or, you know, people who are Democrat supporters, you know, then you make fun of the Republicans or you make fun of you know, people they don't like. So it's just playing up. It's kind of on a lower level. It's doing what Trump's doing. You play up on people's hatred and fears and anxiety and get them riled up with it, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely been interesting. It's been a unique experience. I almost am ashamed when I talk to my fellow atheists that live in other countries when we talk about that stuff. But they're all gracious. They have a what the fuck kind of view, but they don't take it out on me.
No, well, they understand there's a large segment of Americans who are also sharing that what the fuck moment.
I know. That's the scary part. That's like people talk about Pat Robertson, and they say, oh, he's just an old fart. I said, that old fart's got thousands of followers, you know?
Yeah, it's scary that people
still listen to him. That's the
scariest thing. Yeah. Yeah, no, it is, man. I mean, another part of time that really left a bad taste in my mouth at religion and the evangelical born-again whack jobs was George W. Bush's campaign in 03, 04. I was in high school, and you had all these evangelical kids who were sheltered and never left New England, never left New Hampshire, never been anywhere, have this narrow worldview, and they hate gay people. You know, I love this, too. They're all against abortion and killing babies, but they're all gung-ho about war and murdering innocent babies over in Iraq. No problem.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I always saw the hypocrisy in that, and I called these people on their bullshit. And, you know, it created a real hostile environment. But, you know, someone had to say something because it's like being, you know, the one silent, you know, person in a room full of imbeciles where you just want to scream at the top of your lungs, you know?
Yes.
So, you know, I still got a lot of leftover rage from that period of my life when I was, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old.
and, you know, these people just have a narrow view of things, and they believe some book that they had thrown at them when they were a kid, and then that just becomes the truth to everything, and that gives you license to hate other people, that gives you license to talk down to other people and disrespect other people because they don't believe what you believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I can say is we're living in strange times, but I think everybody says that, you know, just like we're in the end times. anybody who's ever said or believed that, it's been in their lifetime that they said that, and it's never been true, thankfully, I think, since we're here.
Because then they died, and look, we're still here, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, the millennial generation that I'm a part of gives me a lot of excitement and hope that, we're moving away from it. I mean, more and more people, you know, as you said, are becoming more comfortable talking about it and saying, no, I don't believe in that bullshit. I don't prescribe to a religion. And if I have children, I'm not going to abuse them with it. I don't care what my family before me did or said. I'm going to do my own thing. I have my own family now and my own scene. And accordingly, I'm not going to subject a innocent, unknowing child to that sort of, you know, nastiness and fantasy and fairy tales. You know, it's fear. It's all fear-based, man. I'm sure you experienced that a lot as a kid. You were afraid to say anything, right? You didn't want to be looked at like the odd man out.
Right. Fear of rejection.
Exactly, because we all, I mean, naturally, man, instinctively, we want to be part of a group and we want to belong, to a community and be loved and be accepted and be cared for and be able to care for others. But, you know, religion just puts up a lot of walls to that, you know. It's like in Northern Ireland, before they sorted things out, Catholics and Protestants couldn't be friends, you know. Which
yes.
is just a bunch of bullshit.
And now Northern Ireland, or Ireland, I should say, has been deemed the best country in the world in some kind of poll they had or some kind of listing. And I have a real good friend, he's become a good friend that lives over there that I was just talking to, and it's become very secular over there.
Yeah. When I went to Ireland in 2009, the end of the way, I was there for New Year's 2009, and I asked one of my tour guides on a bus, I said, how are things in Belfast in Northern Ireland? He's like, oh, they're brilliant now. Everything's peaceful. We're getting along, and, you know, it's just a lot of love now. We've sorted things out. And I said, what's one of the things you attribute to that? He's like, well, I got to tell you, the up and coming generation are less religious. They're not going to church anymore, and they're abandoning the old trains of thought, and they're living their lives. You know, and I thought that was incredible.
It is incredible.
And you're right, man. I mean, as far as an index goes for wellness of a country and happiness, you look at this. And I went to Sweden too. You look at the Scandinavian countries and Denmark. They're some of the least religious spots in the world, and they have the least amount of problems.
Right. Yeah, I have followers that I talk to in Denmark also, actually all over the world, and I kind of joke. I said, I'm moving to Denmark. If Trump gets elected, I'm moving to Canada, you know, or, yeah. I have other people I talk to that are in other places, though, like Dubai or Lebanon or they're Syrian. And it's the exact opposite. They are scared to death of anybody finding out that they're an atheist because they will be killed.
They will definitely be killed. I mean, as you mentioned in your intro, sadly, there are still many parts of the world where if you were open, where there's even a hint of non-belief or dissent or atheism, they'll cut your fucking head off. They'll kill you.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's kind of what's beautiful about your show, man. I mean, part of that is getting the word out there. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take for countries like that. I mean, I know, and I'm trying to think I was reading about, it might have been Bangladesh or Pakistan, where, like, an atheist blogger was tracked down. They went, the dude worked at a bank. They showed up at the bank. They arrested him, and they fucking killed him. They killed the guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
About his atheism. It's like, man, this is
that was Bangladesh, I think.
Yeah, they're still freaky over there with that stuff, man. It's hard for someone like you or I to comprehend, but the sad reality is that's what people who are reasonable, rational, logical thinking human beings that come from a point of science and love and human connection, that they want to move away from the bankrupt draconian philosophies of Islam and religion and the prison of belief. They're persecuted at just staggering levels, which is just so disheartening and discouraging. I kind of feel helpless about it, man. I don't know how you feel about it.
I do too. So I'm trying to do what I can do, and that's why you're trying to do what you can do, you know?
Absolutely, man. And what we're doing is more powerful than dropping bombs in occupying countries and doing that, because that doesn't work either, man. That makes matters worse, in my opinion.
Well, we should know. You know, our independence from England, they tried to kill an idea. And,
exactly.
And they can't kill the idea. You just can't kill an idea. We'll never, ever win the war against terrorism until we kill the thinking that leads to it. Simple. You know?
Yep. Books over bombs, man. That's what I say. Books over bullets, books over bombs.
I agree with you.
And, you know, we're not perfect here in America, but I wouldn't want to live anywhere else on the planet, man. I love America. We do a lot of fucked up shit, and we do a lot of nasty stuff. And we, you know, a lot of people shouldn't be killed or killed in our name. But I don't know, man. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And you know, we have the right now, you and I, to talk. Hopefully the NSA is listening. If you're listening, how are you guys? You know, hopefully, you know, we have the right to do this and to put our thoughts out there and express ourselves freely and not worry about getting arrested at our job and killed and tortured and terrorized. So, you know, we obviously have a long ways to go in our own country, but I still like to think that, you know, people like us and others who speak out can be inspiration to people in other parts of the world who just feel isolated and alone and helpless.
Yeah, and that's the thing that gets me when I talk to some of my followers that are in that spot, and I feel one of them's trying to find a way to get to the United States, and you know, what can I do? I'm not a corporation, and I just don't know what to do, and I feel helpless when we talk. He just wants to get his family out of there, you know.
Right.
I got a couple of friends in India. India's a lot easier, believe it or not. The younger generation's becoming more secular, and they're not getting all the blowback and stuff that they're, you know, Bangladesh is or other countries around them. They seem to be thriving.
Yeah. Well, you know, that goes with the same with Iran, too. I mean, you know, a lot of people in our government and neocons want to say Iran is our enemy, the Ayatollah, they're going to nuke us. I mean, that shit is dying out in Iran, man. If you go to Tehran and major cities over there, they want to emulate the West.
Right.
And that's where I believe in soft power, the influence
right.
of culture, the influence of trade, the influence of the exchange of art, of music, of poetry, of comedy. That's where I believe in the power of all that and think that can change the world. Not bullets, not bombs, not guns, not sanctions, not occupying people, but coming from a place of love and coming from a place of enlightenment. So I'm going to be 30 this year, and I really believe in my lifetime we're going to see the end of Ayatollahs and that kind of rule in Iran, and you're going to see a real secular uprising and integration into their society and government, because those people are going to all get old and die out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So right now in Iran, there's a 30-year-old kid just like me who has his beliefs or non-beliefs and wants a good life, wants to live a good, long, healthy life with his friends and his family and have fun and be free to do what he pleases. And
right.
that's just what's going to happen, man. There's no weapon that can stop that. So hopefully other countries can follow suit, and you know, we can see the eradication of this bankrupt guiding principle of religion and thinking in the Middle Ages and keeping women oppressed and murdering people that you don't, you know, agree with.
Well, you know, what you were talking about Iran, I mean, we're the ones that started this domino effect. You know, the United States started all the pushback and hatred and all that in Iran. You know, we set the ball in motion.
We overthrew Mossadegh in the 50s because he wanted to nationalize the oil, and that pissed British Petroleum off.
Right.
And we sent the CIA went in there, Kermit Roosevelt, Roosevelt's grandson. He was part of the coup, and they overthrew Mossadegh, and they put the Shah in there.
And the Shah was a tyrant.
Nasty. He was a nasty guy.
See, we have a habit of doing that.
Well,
we
meddle in other countries' affairs, and it blows back to bite us in the ass.
That's right. Every stinking time. And the murdering Bushes.
They're the worst, man.
George Dubb.
The Bushes are one of the biggest criminal rackets. They make the mafia look like Disneyland.
Oh, I know that.
And
absolutely.
I recommend everybody read Family of Secrets, Bush Family Dynasty by Russ Baker. You read that book, man, and you'll never look at those Bush maggots the same ever again. You know, that book and then read Roger Stone's Jeb and the Bush Family Crime and the Bush Crime Family. I mean, it's all there, man. You can connect the dots. And these people are they've never had any real jobs. They've never built anything from scratch. They've sucked off the government and they've profited off the misery and suffering of other human beings for decades.
Yeah. You're going to get me on a bandwagon I don't want to get on right now.
Okay, well, hey, man, do you have other questions? I mean, yeah, we could do a whole episode about the Bushes.
Yeah, I know. We actually might. We got about 3.5 minutes left, and I don't know, you have any parting thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, Perry, I want to really thank you, man, for reaching out to me and connecting and inviting me on. I think it's a great thing what you're doing, and I hope people will listen. And I'll just say to anybody who's listening or has a friend or, you know, is at the point in their life where they've had religion their whole lives and they don't believe in it, they don't believe in God, and they want to come out about that and they want to be public about it, you can do it. It's really easy. Just speak your mind. Don't ever be afraid to say how you feel about something. Don't be so afraid of offending somebody that you can't say how you truly feel. People will accept you. It might not be easy at first. It might be a little rough. You might lose some friends, but they're not really your friends if they're not going to support you in this endeavor. So to all my atheists out there, we're out or you're not out, you know, we're here with you. We got your back. Don't be afraid to tell your story. You know, find your voice, do what you love, do what makes you happy, you know, bring peace and kindness to the world. And, you know, we can make things better, and we don't have to do it with violence, and we don't have to do it with war. We can do it with our words, you know, we can do it with our energy, our positive energy, and we can do it when we're coming from a place of love, a love for all of humanity.
And I agree. And if you have problems with that and need a safe environment, I'm at atheisthuman, except for that's spelled differently. It's A-T-H-I-E-S-T human. So it's atheisthuman, spelled funny. Or you could go to Jackman Radio at jackmanradio.podbean.com.
Yeah, and everybody, please go on Twitter and go on Facebook. Like me on Facebook as Jackman Radio. Find me on Twitter at Jackman Radio. Tweet at me, you know. Check out my videos on YouTube. My YouTube page is Jackman Radio. We got some great Donald Trump skits. And
excellent stuff coming. So it's been great talking to you, man. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right, brother. I'm going to end it. You have a good day.
All right, man. Hey, you be good. We'll be in touch.
Yes.
Take care.